As an industry, we will realize our infrastructure is not good enough and we will improve. And we have improved. So speculation made us better, objectively.
You're listening to Because of Bitcoin, a podcast that shares the personal stories of how Bitcoin is having a real impact in people's lives, including mine. I'm your host, Mauricio Di Bartolomeo, the co-founder and CSO of Ledin. And without further ado, let's get started with today's story. Disruption has no playbook. Usually, the longer a system or process has been in place, the harder it is to disrupt it. Remember how long it took Facebook and Twitter to disrupt traditional media? Or how long it took Uber and Airbnb to disrupt the taxi and the hotel industries? In all cases, there was massive resistance coming from governments and industry lobbies. But in the end, the better solution, the better technology, ultimately won. Is society better off for it? That's objectively true. More jobs, more content, more transport options, more places to stay, and more competition ultimately leads to a lower cost of everything. And a lower cost of everything equals a higher living standard. Bitcoin is disrupting the grand prize, money, and financial services. This process will be no different and should encounter even more resistance. During Ledin's early days, banks laughed us out of the room when we told them that we wanted to issue loans backed by Bitcoin. Bitcoin's not an asset, they told us. Why would anyone want to borrow against it instead of selling it? We had every major bank in Canada close our bank accounts. Quite the welcome to their homegrown hero. At the same time, hungry banks in the US and abroad were begging us to bring our accounts over. We know who's laughing now. But disrupting finance is not an easy task, and we need to have the best and the brightest in Team Bitcoin. And luckily, we do. Kiao Wang works closely with Bitcoin and crypto founders, helping them start and navigate the journey. He's an expert on decentralized finance and in helping founders, including Ledin. He's been one of our advisors since the beginning. Kiao works for Alliance DAO, an accelerator for crypto founders. And today, he's going to help us break down what DeFi is, how Bitcoin and crypto are changing how startups can raise capital, and how this new technology is enabling innovation and equalizing access to opportunity around the world. Kiao, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. I really miss you, Mauricio. We haven't chatted for maybe a year now. Hope everything is good on your end.
I know, it has been. And for those who may not know, Kiao was the second advisor to Ledin back in our early days. So he has been following our journey for a very long time. He's been a very big friend of the house since the beginning. So thank you for coming on and spending the time with us.
Thanks for having me.
The way we usually start the show is asking our guests to share a little bit about their background and what their childhood was like. What was your childhood like, Kiao?
Okay, this is a really good question. And because I think my childhood later on shaped my view about crypto. In a nutshell, I've spent a third of my life in each of China, French Canada, and the USA. This will later on shape how I view crypto, especially how crypto impacts people around the world. The first third of my life was in China, and that was at a time when China was growing extremely fast, faster than now, just open up, because before the 1980s, it was communism, but Deng Xiaoping in the 1980s opened China up and turned China into a capitalist country. By the way, right now, the only thing that's communist about China is the name of the party. So China is only communist in the name, but literally everything else is capitalist. And in many ways, I would argue that China is, in some aspects, are more capitalist than the US, for example. So for example, the central banking in China is, I mean, Jerome Powell just pwned the market by controlling that much of the market. And China doesn't even do that. I mean, they do a little bit of that, but definitely not as much. So anyway, point being, I saw the shift, the early growth, the golden period of actual freedom. Many people in the West would be surprised by this. China in the 1980s, or I would say probably 1990s and 2000s, experienced a golden age of not necessarily political freedom, but certainly far more freedom of expression, and economic freedom than the period before and today. I spend the next 10 years of my life, my teenage years, in French Canada. So French is actually my second language. And the French part of Canada is very different from the rest of Canada, in my opinion. And later I went to study at Waterloo. That's when I started speaking English. And then I came to the US. Then the US was the third of my life. And the US, again, is very different from both Canada and China, of course. Americans are very entrepreneurial, far more entrepreneurial than the average Canadian. And that's one thing I really love about America. And Americans are very rebellious as well. Extremely rebellious. And it shows in the Constitution.
As you were growing up, was there ever a point in your life where you developed an interest for economics or money or finance or any of those things that later drew you to Bitcoin?
Oh, 100%. I grew up extremely poor. So I've always been fascinated by money. I've always wanted to make a shit ton of money. Let me clarify. By extremely poor, I don't mean by the average human being. I mean by the Canadian standard, which means I would live on social welfare from the government month over month. So yes, I've always wanted to make a lot of money. But there was a point where I started to appreciate the idea of Bitcoin. One day I decided to wire some money to a gambling website overseas. And I didn't know about the rules or the laws back then, but apparently it's in the gray area. And so when I wired my money to that website, the money got stuck. It got banned, like it got censored by my bank, and it got stuck in the system. I couldn't have access to my money, which, by the way, I wired my entire net worth back then. Like, it was 10 years ago. I wanted to gamble. I wired my entire net worth to this thing, and then it got banned or censored, got stuck in the banking system for like half a year.
But Kiao did not get the urge to purchase Bitcoin until he watched the video by Andreas Antonopoulos. For context, Mr. Antonopoulos was one of the earliest Bitcoin evangelists ever, and he went on to write the excellent book, Programming Bitcoin.
You can still find it on YouTube probably, which is one where he would sit down. I think it's a dinner or something with a bunch of Bitcoin early enthusiasts, not like maxis, but like Bitcoin curious. And he would explain why Bitcoin matters. And it's a 1 hour long video. I watched it. I was so inspired. And it was probably around that time that I aped into Bitcoin. And even then, I felt extremely uncomfortable because you had to wire money to Mt. Gox, and the wiring instruction says Japan, some random bank I've never heard of based in Japan. Extremely uncomfortable. That was late 2012.
The purchase of that Bitcoin would start Kiao's journey into the world of DeFi, or decentralized finance. Can you explain for the audience or the listeners, what is a decentralized finance protocol?
It's a set of smart contracts that allows users to do finance, such as trading, lending, that kind of stuff, in a permissionless way. And let me explain what permissionless really means from a user's point. I'm a user of crypto, and permissionless means something really simple. It means you don't need to KYC. Which is really, really painful. Not that, it's really painful.
KYC means know your customer. It's a process for identifying and verifying a client's identity, usually mandated by a local regulator or government.
There's probably some privacy concerns as well. Like, I have so much personal information that sits in a stockbroker or something, right? And my information gets leaked all the time. Like, it happens over and over. So there's privacy, but the main pain point for me is the time, all the steps that are required to go through KYC. That's one thing, what it means to be permissionless, not having to KYC. The other thing is when you withdraw money. So I'll give you a very, very, very simple example. When you withdraw money from Binance or Coinbase, you need their permission. It's not your money. It's not your money until the money is withdrawn from Binance and goes into your own wallet. So sometimes it's really painful because for whatever reason, there's always cases where they think you don't deserve that money for some reason, or they think that your address is somehow associated with, is marked as a highly risky address for whatever reason.
The concept of DeFi, or decentralized finances, encompasses many concepts and can be complex. One tool that smart contracts enable is the ability to issue a token sale. This allows founders to sell tokens or units from their project and raise funds to build the business. This activity is usually deemed a token offering or a coin offering. Many of you may remember the initial coin offering or the ICO boom that we saw in 2017 and 2018. I asked Kiao to break down this concept for us and why it can have such a profound positive impact in unlocking entrepreneurial talent worldwide.
Most DeFi protocols, when they fundraise from investors, VCs, or retail, they would offer tokens in return for money, in exchange for money. And so what the investor would get is not just the equity into the company, but also tokens. And the tokens are what people call like governance tokens associated with the protocol.
Token sales are a vehicle or mechanism that allows founders to sell units or tokens from their projects to investors as a way to raise capital to build their business. This has massive implications for entrepreneurs and investors globally. For entrepreneurs, it means that you can now access funding for your project without having to know people in Silicon Valley, New York, London, or Hong Kong. Now anyone can raise money from anyone, based on merit and not on who you know.
There are two things I can think of. One is on Twitter, you see a bunch of DeFi protocols that you don't know who the founder is. They're built by anons, or sometimes they're built by super like less well-known founders. And those people tend to be unable to raise money from VCs because they're anons, because they're less well-known. What they do instead is they raise money from other anons, angel investors on Twitter, or from retail. And so in the traditional financial system, this would be very hard to do, because first of all, the anons are all KYC. Like, anons just don't exist in the traditional financial system. Everyone in the financial system needs to be KYC'd. So anons don't even exist. So crypto allows those anons to invest in crypto protocols. Crypto also allows the retail around the world to make borderless payment to invest in those protocols as well.
That's fascinating. Just to talk a little bit about how this is changing the landscape of founders in the crypto space, you have put out some really interesting tweets recently about the composition of where the applications for founding early stage crypto companies are coming from for the DAO Alliance, which we'll get into in a second. But can you speak to a bit about the shifts that you are seeing in the composition of where these founders are coming from and their backgrounds?
Okay, so there are two things I can talk about. One is their geographic breakdown, and two is their education and past work experience. Okay, so in terms of geography, the most striking trend in the last 3 years, 2 years, is that there are fewer American founders in crypto and more Asian founders in crypto. And we all know why. That the US does not like crypto. And that really pushed a lot of the entrepreneurial energy to the East. So that's the single most striking trend I saw from our data. Other parts of the world, there have not been too many changes. You know, Latin America, Europe have been pretty stable in the last 2 years. Africa is growing a little bit, it seems to me. So that's a good sign. So that's the geographic breakdown. In terms of previous education and work experience, this is an extremely striking trend, which is that in late 2021, the percentage of crypto founders that come from an elite school, such as Stanford, MIT, or have worked at an elite tech company in Silicon Valley, such as Facebook, Google, etc., peaked. That number peaked in late 2021. It's been going downhill since then. Quarter after quarter, it's been going down. Again, I think I know the reason, but the late 2021 peak coincided with the Jerome Powell rate hike. Again, like, it's crazy. Like, Jerome Powell controls everything. Like, the impact that the monetary policy has ripple effects on everything. And crypto found, like, the number of crypto founders coming from elite schools is one of them. It's really mind-boggling.
One of the main criticisms that crypto and tokens get, you know, outside of Bitcoin is this idea that it's just a big casino. And I have my view, but I would love to get your view and if you could share it with the audience.
It's a fact. Yes, tokens is a big casino. But there are two things I want to share. One is the first 10 years of crypto has been very speculative. But one of the biggest byproduct of this huge speculation is the installation of the infrastructure. And by that, I mean two things. One, the speculation drove users to install wallets and to start playing around with crypto. You cannot underestimate the impact of that, because everyone has gambling interests. Everyone wants to make money. It's human nature. And the fact that there's free money to, quote unquote, free money to be made in crypto, of course people will go out of their way and install a crypto wallet and play around with crypto and educate themselves. You cannot underestimate the value of that. And the second part of installation of the infrastructure is we really got our layer ones and layer twos battle tested through the speculation. Because every time the price of Bitcoin goes up 10% within a day, on Ethereum, the fees will spike up. People will get liquidated. And as an industry, we will realize our infrastructure is not good enough and we will improve. And we have improved. So that's the first thing I wanted to mention. Like, speculation made us better, objectively. The second thing is that we are seeing a lot of non-speculative applications right now. And by the way, this ties back to the earlier conversation around democratizing. But the fact of the matter is, these non-speculative applications are happening, and they're happening in Latin America, in Africa, in Southeast Asia. Why? Because people want the stablecoin. People want the digitized dollar. People want that. People want that to hedge against their own currency depreciation. They want to make cross-border transactions, including remittance to each other. This is real utility. This is non-speculative, real applications. But for some reason, these VCs don't want to touch them because they're in Latin America, Africa, and in Southeast Asia.
You, more so than anyone else in this industry, have talked to a lot of founders, people that have wanted to start businesses in crypto and in Bitcoin. What is there a persona for a crypto founder that you could share? Like, what is a crypto founder? How would you define one? And how are the ones that you've worked with?
I mean, a crypto founder is just one who builds crypto products. I haven't met many founders outside of crypto. Crypto is my focus. It's basically my entire career. But the crypto founders I've worked with, a lot of them, you know, they come from backgrounds like you and me. They appreciate why crypto matters from their own childhood or personal experience. They also appreciate speculation, because when you grow up poor, you want to find every possible way to make money and to survive. Counterintuitively, when a founder likes speculation, I like it. I like it when a crypto founder likes speculation. I really think if you don't like speculation, if you're allergic to the idea of using crypto to speculate, it's very hard for you to fully appreciate the power of crypto, because you're not going to use the products. If you really want to understand crypto, you have to use the products. Some of the best founders I've worked with, obviously, they're all extremely resilient. That is probably the only common denominator across successful founders in every industry. In addition, some of the best crypto founders I've worked with are very insightful. I review thousands of applications to our accelerator program per year. Like literally, I read all of them. I will take the first call. I will talk to like hundreds of them per year. It's really painful, by the way. But the best founders are able to teach me something new. And because I take hundreds of them, there's very few things that I haven't heard of. But whenever I hear a founder tells me something new, I love it. If I learn something from them, I love it.
And what motivated you to join Alliance Style? Because you're one of the founding members. So can you explain a bit about how was that journey to create Alliance Style and how you kind of ended up getting together with this group, excellent group of people?
So before Alliance Style, I was the founding head of product at Messari, helped Messari get to product market fit. I left after 3 years. That was 2020. And then I said to myself, how do I go through this journey again, 0 to 1 journey again, but not once, but 50 times a year. So we started working with early stage founders and a lot of them, about 50 per year, actually. And I really fucking love it. Through this job, I literally found meaning to life, because the kind of founders that we worked with tend to be young. Many of them are first time founders. They're green, they're inexperienced. They haven't had much success in life, but they're extremely resilient and smart. And when we help them succeed, the amount of satisfaction that I get from that, from a successful founder that we supported from day one, tell me, hey, I really appreciate everything you've done for me. I could not have done it without you. The satisfaction you get from hearing that is unparalleled. Unmatched. It's the best feeling you can possibly have.
Very emotional to hear you say that, because as you were sharing the timeline and I was going back in time, we didn't go through Alliance DAO, but you started helping us out around that same time. Like I think it was around 2020 when we started working together. And I can think back to all of the help that each one of our advisors has chipped in and helped us through the journey. And this is not through an accelerator program. I'm talking more about the advisors that we're able to add to the business as the business grew. But, you know, we are a great example of a company that you helped back in 2020, before our first VC round, before lending was cool. And we met actually at Ivy. We met at our business school because you were a judge from Messari, actually. You were judging a panel. And that's actually how we met, through JP Vern, who's a really good friend. And for those of you who don't know, by the way, JP Vern ran the first blockchain program in all of Canada through Ivy. And he actually was, I believe, Lennon's first advisor, who then connected us with you. I can say, as speaking from experience, that if anybody listening here is even thinking or considering applying to Alliance DAO, I would 100% encourage you to do so, just so you can get that first call with Cal. that alone will be worth it. So, and I guess, you know, we're reaching the end of here, but this it wouldn't be a conversation around decentralized finance and fundraising if I didn't ask you about regulation. And where do you think that that's going? And what would your advice be to founders in the next sort of few years as they're considering this?
Yeah. So when it comes to regulations, I actually don't think about it. I follow what's going on, but I never take that into consideration. And the reason for that is, with every risk comes with opportunity. Regulatory risk means opportunity. And the opportunity it creates is that a bunch of other people would otherwise thought of building something in crypto. So you have less competition. As a founder, you have less competition. As an investor, it's priced in. So I never actually think about this. But there are some really positive signs around the world. I can't speak for the US, because the US really is a shit show. But things can change very quickly, because the election is next year. Things can change very quickly every 4 years. I don't want to make any predictions. But in the rest of the world, you have Europe that rolled out MiCA last year, which is the first proper regulations around crypto. You have Hong Kong that embraced crypto as well, publicly, despite China. For those who don't know, Hong Kong is part of China. And the fact that Hong Kong embraces crypto says a lot about China's stance towards crypto. Like, there's no way Hong Kong would do this without the approval of the party. I think the party wants to use Hong Kong as a testbed for crypto, is my suspicion. Singapore is doing still okay. Like, all the Chinese founders actually go to Singapore. It's a fairly, I mean, there have been some drama here and there, but overall fairly favorable. A lot of founders are in Dubai. Dubai is one of the most favorable countries towards crypto. And then also last week, I spoke with an African founder based in South Africa, and I learned something about South Africa being the first country in Africa that has a proper crypto regulation. And of course, Latin America, you guys operate in Latin America, so I'm sure things are fine there. Yeah, I'm seeing positive signs.
Disrupting is not easy. Ledin, as many other disruptors, has faced its own set of challenges, which we've overcome thanks to our hard work, resilience, and the guidance and support of advisors like Kiao. One of the unique things about Bitcoin and crypto is that it's not only disrupting money, but the entire financial apparatus that it comes with. Payments, lending, fundraising, and even trading. All of it is happening at the same time. Bitcoin ETFs are eating gold. Every dollar loan that Ledin issues is one that a bank didn't issue. Every trade that happens in a decentralized platform is a trade that didn't happen in the New York Stock Exchange. The old way was accessible to and guarded by a select group of people in a particular set of countries. The new way is available to everyone. Doesn't matter where you were born, your skin color, your beliefs, or where you went to school. This digital evolution will give us better money, better lending markets, more accountability from central banks and politicians, more equitable and merit-based ways of raising funds to build your business. And we will make it happen because of Bitcoin. If you enjoyed this Because of Bitcoin episode, I would be very grateful for the 5 seconds it would take you to drop us a review and give us a rating on your favorite podcasting platform. This will really help us reach even more listeners. And if you'd like to learn more about Bitcoin, be sure to check out our newsletter by subscribing at ledin.io. That's ledin.io. Again, this was Mauricio Di Bartolomeo. Stay tuned for our next episode. And until then, muchas gracias y los quiero mucho. Ciao, ciao.